Gas prices remain high across the United States, but federal and state governments are looking into ways to provide some relief at the pump. Some states, not including Wisconsin, have created gas tax holidays, and President Biden is tapping into the country's strategic reserve of petroleum to make supply more available right away. It's led to questions about what actions would actually have an impact on gas prices and how sustainable those interventions are. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. How are higher gas prices affecting you? How would you like to see the government address the problem, if at all? Do you think it is the federal government's responsibility? Do you want to see states like Wisconsin at least temporarily cut gas taxes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Menzie Chin is a professor of public affairs and economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Menzie, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob.
Let's start by putting gas prices in perspective. I know at the nominal level, the actual numbers we see at the gas station, they're at record highs. When we adjust for inflation in real dollars, how do our current gas prices stack up?
Actually, it's a good thing that you mentioned that. I mean, I think there are two factors going on. First of all, we've seen this sort of whiplash in gasoline prices. So, you know, looking back in April 2020, they were $1.84 per gallon on average nationwide, and now we're at $4.22. So you could be excused for thinking, wow, that's both a big increase over a short period of time, relatively speaking. But then, because we haven't remembered the fact that prices in general are rising, you might be surprised to find out that actually the price we're seeing right now is about, on average, the price we've seen over the last 30 years after adjusting for inflation. So that's exactly right. In terms of the inflation-adjusted price, we're pretty close to where we've been in over the past 30 years.
That said, COVID has had some impact on prices. It seems like the big low you mentioned, I believe, is because people weren't going anywhere, and that lowered demand for gas, a lot of industry shutting down for the short term. What has driven that wild swing from the lows to the highs now?
Well, exactly what you mentioned was that COVID shut down, big swaths of the economy, both in terms of work and in terms of leisure and driving around for leisure. So it's not surprising that prices dropped so low during the height of the pandemic. Since then, as you've seen, inflation generally has risen overall as demand for goods and demand for services have picked up with the recovery. So, we saw gasoline prices rising even before this latest round, and we shouldn't have been surprised in some respects that along with the price of everything else, gasoline prices should rise as we have this recovery. Now, on top of that, we have the supply interruption. So before, it was demand rising back to where it was, or closer to where it was before. Now we have the interruption coming from first geopolitical jitters arising from the threat of an invasion and Russia being sanctioned and having the supplies of oil coming from Russia being taken off the world markets. But now we have it, the reality of actually removal of Russian oil supplies from the general global pool of oil. And so it's that's the case where we've seen oil prices jump from, about $90 per barrel back in beginning of February to $108 today. So as oil prices go, so too go gasoline prices.
In response to those prices, President Biden announced he'll be releasing 1 million barrels of oil a day from the country's strategic reserves. Here's some of what he had to say about the decision last week.
This is a wartime bridge to increase oil supply until production ramps up later this year. And it is by far the largest release of our national reserve in our history. It will provide a historic amount of supply for a historic amount of time, a 6-month bridge to the fall. And we'll use the revenue from selling the oil now to restock the Strategic Petroleum Reserve when prices are lower.
So when this oil starts flowing, Menzie, are we going to see a difference when we roll up to the gas station?
Well, at various times, we've encountered high prices in oil, and of course, gasoline then is a political touchstone. And we've often looked for ways in which policymakers can reduce the price of gasoline when it's spiked. the Strategic Petroleum Reserve being tapped is one way in which the president has some influence over oil prices and hence gasoline prices, but it's not a big one. And there are two ways to look at it. First, the oil is in the ground and we have sort of semi-ready access to it. And so if you think about the big pool of oil that's out there that people can tap into, companies and so forth, refiners, well, it's kind of known that it's there and available. So in some ways, you don't expect it to have a big impact on prices when it's actually released into the general pool to be used. But another way of putting it in context is to think, well, each day, the president's proposing to release about 1 million barrels per day for a total of 180 million barrels, which is enormous, actually, relative to the fact that we've got about 565 million barrels in the reserve. So it's a big chunk of our reserve being released. And that's on top of the 50 million we released starting back in November. But, you know, what are we responding to? And in part, over the past 2 months, we've been responding to the possibility and then the actuality of sanctions on Russian oil exports. And so, well, what's relevant then is how much oil does Russia export? And it's something on the order of 5 million barrels per day of just crude oil, and perhaps another 4 to 5 million of sort of petroleum derivatives and so forth. So, you know, you've got this big withdrawal of oil in principle from the supply in world markets. And you're only making up a portion of it. And so on the day that the announcement was made, you know, oil prices dropped about a dollar from the beginning, the opening of the trading to the close. And that reflects the fact that it's hard to have a big influence on a global market for oil just by turning on the taps on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And that's not to say it's not a good idea. I mean, there are very few things that you can do, and that's one of them. And so what you're doing is you're trying to moderate prices a little bit and signal your willingness to try to do other things as well. So in some sense, I would say, you know, why not try something? This is a big change in oil and hence gasoline prices that you want to mitigate for the population.
Talking to economist Menzie Chin from UW-Madison about the price of oil and gas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. David is with us in Eau Claire. David, hi.
Yeah, hi. I've got two comments and I think one question. My comments are, one, I think as Wisconsinites, we should be very happy to pay more gas. Well, here's my comments for two reasons. One, for environmental reasons. We are at a tipping point environmentally. And globally, we should all, as citizens, try and stop the burning of the fuels as much as we can. And the second reason we as Wisconsinites should be very happy to pay for more gas is to, in part, push for peace and disarmament in the world, in so much as that we're funding wars by our purchasing of oil and gas from various authoritarian regimes, as well as oligarchs in our own country. My question is, do you think that the current conflict in Ukraine will add a real push to the environmental impetus or in need that we really need to get off of these fossil fuels?
Got it. David, thanks for the call. Menzie, is this situation higher prices and, as David says, the Russian invasion of Ukraine adding impetus to getting away from these petroleum products in the first place?
Well, I think we've got lots of understanding that we do want to move away from a carbon-based economy in terms of fuels and so forth. And I guess to a certain extent, having this volatility in energy prices only highlights the dangers of relying upon energy, especially as that has to be produced and then shipped far distances to here to be consumed. So I'm hopeful. I'm not sure because we have seen spikes in energy prices before, as in 2008. You know, the price of oil was in real terms much higher in 2008 than it is right now. And yet, you know, we still saw resistance and still see resistance to moving towards, for instance, a carbon tax or some other way of imputing a higher price for use of fossil fuels. So I'm hopeful. I hope that happens. I'm not sure it will in great part.
David, thanks for the call. We're talking to UW-Madison Public Affairs and Economics Professor Menzi Chin about gas prices and how to bring them down. If that's possible, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you want to see a Wisconsin gas tax holiday? How about a federal gas tax holiday? Would you rather get government rebates or direct payments? How much are high gas prices affecting you right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Menzi Chin, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. With us today, looking at gas and oil markets, why prices have gone up over the last couple of years. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see quick short-term action from state or federal government cutting gas taxes? What do you think of the idea of releasing petroleum from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? Do you want to see the U.S. be less dependent on petroleum products? If so, how? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering what your guest thinks about whether we may have moved global de-dollarization into a warp speed by finding ourselves now with oil being traded in other currencies and people, other countries are afraid to leave their foreign exchange reserves in our control.
Jim, thanks for that call. Interesting question, Menzi. I've seen Russia demanding rubles in some cases for oil and natural gas payments. Negotiations between Saudi Arabia, I believe, and China saying, hey, maybe we can sell and buy oil with something other than dollars. How big a deal is that?
So that's an interesting question. I should mention that the demise of the dollar as the international currency has been forecasted like 20 times out of the last 40 years. What's true is that the reliance on the dollar makes various countries vulnerable, and in particular, commodity exporters are even more vulnerable to the extent that almost all commodities are priced in dollars, and so typically you're going to see invoicing in dollars, and that's dollars are what they're going to be accumulating, and so the use of sanctions in this case, and this is not the only case, Iran beforehand. Has definitely made it in the interest of various entities, governments that think they might fall on the wrong side of U.S. interests, has given them an impetus to try to diversify and get away from both use of the dollar, but also financial infrastructure like SWIFT and so forth, the international messaging system that banks use, that aren't under the control of the U.S. I guess the answer is yes. You've given a motivation for countries to diversify, but it's going to be costly, and so they're seeing the costs right now of being reliant upon the dollar. Maybe that'll move them towards trying to move away from use of the dollar. That's in fact what Russia tried to do, and we now see in some ways how ineffective it was. Yes, they diversified out of dollars in terms of the reserves, but a lot of their reserves are in other or with other central banks and other banks, which are now afraid of undertaking transactions because the U.S. would then sanction them for dealing with Russia. So, it's not just the use of the dollar, but it's also the international infrastructure that's linked in by way of messaging systems, but by way of transacting with American banks and financial institutions. Diversifying away is very, very costly. And then you have to ask yourself, when the war is over and you go back to something that's more like normal times, these countries, are they going to be willing to pay the price to operate their own systems, develop their own systems, and to somehow have more reserves in, let's say, euros? I don't think they're going to diversify a lot into renminbi, the Chinese currency, because that will be very costly to use and transact. In the end, I'd say, yes, there's a potential for dethroning the dollar, but I don't see it as defining a big shift away from the dollar as the dominant currency in international transactions.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Janice in Lac-Da-Flambeau. Janice, hi.
wanted to say that I have driven a Prius for maybe 15, 20 years now. And I drive it because it's a hybrid and it cuts down on emissions, et cetera, et cetera. However, in the last 2 years when I have renewed my license plate, instead of the normal $85 that everybody in Wisconsin is charged, I'm charged $160. And so are everybody else who I know who drives an energy-efficient hybrid or all-electric car. And I talked to our lieutenant governor about this 2 years ago or so, and he said, well, it was because we weren't paying our fair share of gas taxes. In my opinion, the gas guzzler should be paying, raise the rate for everybody, and let the gas guzzlers get rid of their gas guzzling cars and pay fewer gas taxes.
Janice, thanks a lot for your call. Menzie, Janice getting into some of the finer points of government taxes and motivation when it comes to fuel savings. The rationale, as Janice was saying, for that higher fee was you're buying less gas, paying less tax to maintain the roads. Are we trying to sort out this policy on what we want to motivate consumers to do here?
So I think that's an excellent point and excellent question. I mean, you got to think about, you know, there's these proposals to give a tax holiday on gasoline. And so that seems like a good idea. But you have to realize that the gas tax does what? It provides about 60% of the funds in the federal highway funding for roads and so forth. That's at the federal level. There's probably more at the state level as well. And so, you know, those taxes are being used for something. If you provide a tax holiday, they're going to disappear. And at the same time, I think federal taxes are about 48 cents on each gallon. So it's not a particularly big chunk of the cost of gasoline. You're not going to have a tremendous impact given how high prices are now. So tax holiday doesn't make sense. From that standpoint, both standpoints, funding and in terms of impact. On the other hand, this issue about whether a hybrid should pay, I mean, that goes to the issue about who should be supporting the highway, the funding for maintaining highways and roads. And the fact of the matter is, a Prius, while it doesn't contribute as much carbon to the atmosphere, at the same time, it does impose wear on the roads. And so, you know, as you are moving away from gasoline as a power mode for vehicles, you know, you're running down the amount of funds that are available to be devoted to keeping the roads up, which everybody, both hybrids, electrics, and conventional vehicles, are using. While I think it sounds a little perverse, we should be encouraging the use of hybrids and electrics. You know, we do need to fund roads and highways. And so the question then is, how can we reformulate our tax system in order to do that in an efficient and equitable fashion?
Thanks for the call, Janice. We'll go to Bill now in Watertown. Bill, hi.
Yes, hello. Rebating a gas tax, you just talked about some of the drawbacks to it. Others are that if there's any excess profits going on right now in the oil and gas industry, and it's human nature that might be the case, wouldn't get rid of that. And so I'm thinking that we should be looking into excess profit taxes right now, wartime excess profit taxes, and then taking and rebating, putting a cap on that and rebating the excess back to those less able to pay. This high gasoline prices right now are a bit of a regressive tax for very poor people who can least afford it.
Bill, thanks for the call. Menzie, what do you think of that idea? Presumably somebody's making more money with oil and gas prices being higher. What do you think of the idea of a tax on that to help people who can't afford that gas right now?
Well, in principle, I'm sympathetic to it. The question is, I'm sure profits will rise somewhat. But it's true that, you know, for a gallon of gasoline, about 61% of it is accounted for just by oil. And so we have a rule of thumb in the business that for each dollar increase in the price of oil, you get, you know, about 2.5 cents increase in the price of gasoline. So, you know, if there's a big deviation from that and you get big increases in profits for oil companies, yes, I can see why you might want to redistribute the profits back to people. And that's probably better than some of the other alternative ways of trying to lessen the impact on households. I guess the question I'd ask is, if you do rebate the profits, in a way, you're giving that to people who would then presumably spend a big share of that still on gasoline. And that would just keep up the demand for gasoline. And part of the sort of market forces that we want to appeal to, especially if you're thinking about environmental concerns, is that higher prices will induce people to conserve on the use of gasoline. So yes, in terms of sort of mitigating the harm that might hit households who happen to be using cars as their gasoline-driven cars as their main means of transport, but it's probably not going to be completely equitable, and in some ways it works at cross purposes with some of the things that you might want to do, including encouraging conservation.
Bill, thanks for the call, and Menzie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Menzie Chin is professor of public affairs and economics at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, with us today looking at gas prices in the U.S.